All right, everybody, welcome back. I'm Clayton Pixton.
I'm Susan Easton Black.
And again, you're listening to the one and only Joseph Smith Impressions of a Prophet with Susan Easton Black.
Hey, thanks, Clayton.
And you all know how privileged we are to be doing this. I don't have to tell you that, but I'm going to tell you anyway. You're privileged to be here. I'll kick us off with a hymn. This one is Master of the Tempest is Raging. Master, the tempest is raging, the billows are tossing high. The skies are shadowed with blackness, no shelter or help is nigh. Carest thou not that we perish? How canst thou lie asleep? When each moment so madly is threatening a grave in the angry deep. Master, with anguish of spirit, I bow in my grief today. The depths of my sad heart are troubled. Awaken and save, I pray. Torrents of sin and of anguish sweep o'er my sinking soul. And I perish, dear Master. Oh, hasten and take control. The winds and the waves shall obey thy will. Peace, be still. Whether the wrath of the storm-tossed sea, or demons, or men, or whatever it be, no water can swallow the ship where lies the master of ocean and earth and skies. They all shall sweetly obey thy will. Peace be still, peace be still. They all shall sweetly obey thy will. Peace, peace, be still. Okay, Susan, please take us where we left off.
So as we start out tonight, our topic is going to be Joseph Smith, a prisoner for Christ's sake. And you'd say, well, is there any other reason Joseph's going to be a prisoner? And I'd say, oh, I don't know. They're making up things all along the way, including 27 charges against him once he's in Richmond jail. But basically, in Joseph's mind, the reason he's a prisoner, it's because of his testimony of Jesus Christ. Well, as we start out, a momentary review. We know that on October 27th, then of 1838, that this man, who should look familiar to everybody, Lilburn W. Boggs, who was governor of the state of the Missouri, has the audacity to issue an extermination order against anyone that calls himself a Latter-day Saint. In other words, you say Joseph's a prophet, you say the Book of Mormon is true, you will be driven from the state of Missouri or exterminated.
Definitely audacity, but you'd probably say the citizens that he, you know, was kind of representing, they were all for it, right? As a matter of fact, kind of made him more popular.
Yep, he becomes popular so much so that the next office he wins, literally landslide, is he runs for senator to represent Missouri. And you'd say that's amazing. Hardly has to campaign because of this and other things that he had done. Well, kind of back to our story. We left off last time talking about Far West, which was the hub of the wagon wheel. It's our biggest city there at this point by 1838. In Missouri, and we know that militia units have now surrounded the community. We've set up lines of defense, and we know that the leader of the Latter-day Saint defense was a man named George Hinkle. And George Hinkle, I wish we had a different picture. You know, he's got his hand up. I don't know if I'd call it a wave. He's pointing, you know, it's me, but he's the one that Joseph gave a new name to and called him Judas Iscariot Hinkle, But as Joseph and several of the leaders of the church, including his brother Hiram and Parley P. Pratt, Sidney Rigdon, and a few others, head out to now talk to the generals to see if they could avoid any kind of bloodshed war, that George Hinkle then says to General Samuel Lucas, "Here are your prisoners." Now, a momentary kind of remembrance of this Samuel Lucas. Samuel Lucas was a clerk in the court system down in Independence, pretty close by you, Clayton. And you'd say by day you'd probably not notice the guy. But he puts on a uniform and suddenly he's a general. So you'd say, where does he get all his kudos? Taking notes at the courts. And I'd say, oh, probably not so much. But once he's got a uniform on, he could be a man to be feared. Well, Samuel Lucas now has the prisoners. He will see that they are tied to trees. And now, as we really begin what we're talking about new tonight, is that Joseph Smith and other prisoners will face what's called a military tribunal. It's a court-martial, and notice it's October 31st. It's Halloween night. And I always think, well, what would I like to dress up as? Who are the scary figures that we could say? And I go, oh, Lilburn W. Boggs would work. Samuel Lucas would be another possibility. But on Halloween night, inside a, you know, kind of a tent with Joseph's fellow prisoners not allowed in, still tied to trees, you've got a group has gathered. You've got the leaders of militias. You've got some preachers from different churches. And charges are going to be read with the idea that they are charging Joseph and fellow prisoners with treason against the United States. And at this point, we turn to really one of my heroes, never a member of the church, named Alexander Doniphan. Doniphan, as you recall, was a brigadier general from Clay County. He actually lives in Liberty, and it was the very place where the saints had been until 1836. And Alexander Doniphan has now led his troops up to the Far West area and learns that a court-martial is going to be held and enters that court-martial. Remember, he's an attorney by trade, and he always defends alleged criminals. I have a son that's a criminal defense attorney, and he always says, Mom, they're alleged criminals. They're not criminals. Hmm. You know, they have to be proven in a court of law. And so Doniphan now heads out to the tree area and wants to know, where's Joseph Smith? And for the first time, then, Doniphan will meet the prophet and vice versa. And Doniphan wants to know, can I defend all of you? In other words, I'd like to defend you at this court-martial. And so Doniphan now heads in, and he's got his defense pretty well set because Joseph Smith was not a member of a militia unit, even in Far West. And so with that, it's totally illegal to hold this this tribunal. But in the meantime, Doniphan, as a tribunal, is being held. The conclusion was Joseph Smith's fellow prisoners are guilty of treason. And Samuel Lucas then announces that the punishment for the crime of treason is that they are to be shot, and they are to be shot at Far West than in the main center of town. And the center of the town of Far West is the LDS temple site. And Samuel Lucas, who's very angry at Doniphan for defending Joseph Smith, assigns Doniphan and his men that the next day, November 1, they are to march the prisoners then into Far West, and they're in the center of town, basically the temple site. Doniphan and his men are to shoot the Latter-day Saint leaders. At this point, Doniphan becomes an incredible hero. And you get John F. Kennedy, years later, puts together a book called Profiles in Courage, and then it ultimately becomes a television series. And one of the men he features is Alexander Doniphan, and it's this moment in Doniphan's life. I mean, Doniphan did a lot of great things, from being a hero in the Mexican War and serving in the political government. But at this point, Doniphan will now defy a superior officer. So Doniphan now says to Samuel Lucas, it is cold-blooded murder, and that he's not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. My men are not going to do it. In fact, he goes, we're going to go home. You know, I don't want anything with what you guys are doing. I don't think it's right. And you'd say Samuel Lucas, the clerk of the court, has obviously seen Doniphan in court, and he knows when Doniphan gets riled up, well, you don't want to tangle with this 6'3 guy that could lay the kind of smaller court stenographer flat, right? And so as the story goes, is that as Doniphan passes him the note and says to Samuel Lucas, cold-blooded murder, as he passes him the note, he says, sir, one day you and I will meet in battle.
If you do this, right?
Yeah, if you do this, you carry out this. We'll meet in battle, and when we do, we'll see who's the better man. Well, Samuel Lucas, he doesn't appear to be afraid of Joseph Smith, Hiram, Parley, any of the Latter-day Saints that are captive. He doesn't seem to be afraid of the Latter-day Saints who are preparing to defend Far West. But he knows Doniphan well enough to know that he is very afraid. And so with this, General Samuel Lucas changes his mind. And his conclusion is that what he'd really like to do is that he'd like to run for governor of the state of Missouri. And his plan is, what I think I'll do is I'll take these prisoners to Independence. And then when they get to Independence, we'll have runners go forward, tell everybody in town, come out to the main square, and then be able to say things like, of all the generals that gathered outside of Far West, only one could capture old Joe. And suddenly Samuel Lucas will be whisked into the governor's office. So he's got these political aspirations. On November 1, instead of killing Joseph Smith and fellow prisoners, Samuel Lucas will order that they be taken to Far West. And so they're taken to Far West, and the reason was he wanted them to be able to pick up clothing and food for their trip to Independence. In other words, he didn't want them eating the soldiers' food. He didn't, you know, in other words, okay, if I'm going to take you there, you stop by, you get your necessary things, you can take care of yourselves. So Joseph's fellow prisoners are put in prisoners' wagons. And the prisoner wagons look a lot different than, say, a covered wagon or a wagon without a cover. What they are is that the prisoners need to lie flat, and then they put a tarp over them. They nail it down on the corners, all the sides of the wagon, so that no one can see them as they come into town. Well, eventually, they will stop by the best known is when they stop at Joseph's house. Tarp is lifted up. Joseph goes inside. A man's with him. He's got a bayonet. Emma's crying. She thought he'd been killed. Joseph's younger son, Joseph Smith III, comes to him and wants to know what's happening. He's pushed back by a bayonet. Joseph is then put back in the wagon, the tarp then placed down. And at this point, you've got a crowd that crowds around the wagon. And coming towards that wagon will be Mother Smith. And as Mother Smith comes towards the wagon, she's not able to get to the wagon because of the press of people. And she yells out, is there not a man in this crowd that will make way for the mother of a prophet of God? And you think, oh, well, wouldn't you think every man would be, okay, Mother Smith, come on, we're making way for you. But suddenly, I don't know, some big guy kind of pushes people out of the way, and Mother Smith gets close to the wagon, and she's now yelling, saying, speak to me, Joseph, speak to me, or I too cannot live but another moment. In other words, she's been up all night caring for her husband, who is sure that he's, as he's heard these guns going off outside of Far West, sure that his sons have been killed. Joseph will then thrust his hand through the tarp. Mother Smith will grab his hands. And the last words that we know as Joseph and the fellow prisoners are leaving town, his last words will be to his mom. Joseph will say, "God bless you, Mother." And now they head out. Now, as they head out, they're leading towards independence because recall that Samuel Lucas has these amazing aspirations to be the next governor. And along the way, they're stopping in every little town. In other words, a prisoner's tarp comes off. Prisoners are exhibited in the towns. And for Hiram Smith, he said he felt like they were like, an elephant had come to town. People want to come, they want to touch him, say, "Guess who I touched?" To be able to say, "Hey, I touched, this guy." And along the route towards independence, Parley P. Pratt becomes very scared. And he's in the same wagon. There are two prisoners' wagon, and he's in the same with Joseph. And he asked Joseph, he said, "Joseph, are we going to independence to die? Has it come to that?" And Joseph will say, "Oh, no, Parley." He goes, "The reason we're going to independence is that I've never had an opportunity to preach on the streets of independence."
And he said the Lord had made it known to him.
Yeah, made it right. Known. "Hey, I'm the reason we're going there is that I'm going to preach." And Samuel Lucas thinks he's going to be governor. And Parley thinks we're going to die. And for Joseph, he is confident, "I'm going there because I'm going to preach." Well, okay. Runners from the militias have gone forward. They're telling the people in the crowd, literally hundreds, some say 1,000, have gathered around that square in Independence. And the wagons are coming in and very difficult to get through because of the masses of people. And pretty much stopped at one point. And a woman in the crowd now yells out, "Are you really Jesus Christ?" And suddenly you get, "Speak, speak, let the prisoner speak." Well, for Samuel Lucas, who's riding high, he's a general. And Joseph wants to know from General Lucas, "Can I speak?" And General is, "By all means, tell everybody you're Christ." In other words, really, really swing me right into that political governor's seat. Joseph then stands up, and as he does so, he turns to Parley and he says, "See, Parley, I told you I've come to Independence to preach." And Joseph then stands up and he tells the people that he's not Christ, but that he has come to Independence to preach and that he is a follower of Christ. He then speaks of the sufferings that he has experienced because he's a Christian. And, the tar and feathering that we've had an occasion to talk about, other things. And finally, when he reaches the apex of his talk, he says, "Under no man's hands have I suffered worse than those of Samuel Lucas." Suddenly, people are moved to tears in the crowd. They're now saying to Samuel Lucas, "Let this good man go." In other words, what are you doing? Years later, Samuel Lucas was asked, "Hey, I thought you were going to run for governor. What happened?" He goes, "The worst thing I ever did was to allow Joseph Smith to speak in Independence." Well, the prisoners will continue on their journey, and they will end up in what's called the Jackson County Courthouse. And still kind of visible today and open for tours, depending season, I suppose. But you'd say of the three different jails that Joseph will be in Missouri, following the military court martial, this was his best experience. They're not there for long. But the reason it was such a good experience, people would come and they'd have pies, cake, jams, jellies, and they'd send kids, "This is from my mom. She just wants you to know she's a Christian too." And so lots of visitors, lots of chances to share the message of the restoration. Well, okay, we now turn our attention to a man named General John Clark. way back when, Clayton, as we were talking, we know that Governor Boggs asked General Clark to lead up the whole thing of the extermination order. And General Clark is from Richmond. What did General Clark and General Samuel Lucas have in common? They both want to be governor of the state of Missouri. Well, General Clark, he's slow on getting to Far West. In other words, he's thorough. He's meticulous. He's going from town to town. Do you believe Joseph's a prophet? And by the time he gets to Far West, and, you know, we had pretty much pulled down all our defenses because the military is kind of moving on. But here comes General Clark and his men late on the scene. He is very angry when he finds the prize. Joseph is gone.
And he probably thinks it was his job and his prerogative to deal with them, right?
I mean, he sees himself, you know, the important head guy that he allows his men to go in and to destroy Far West. I mean, you go there today and, you know, you don't find shops, you know, even foundations hardly have homes. They're pretty thorough. The abuse they did to men, women, and children, just horrendous. So that's General Clark. Well, General Clark is so angry that he sends a missive to Samuel Lucas there in Independence. And he says, I'm going to take my men. I'm going to march on Independence, but I want Joseph. In other words, you know, wait till you hear what I did to Far West. That's only the beginning of what I can do to Independence unless you give me those prisoners. And Samuel Lucas, who pretty much really dislikes General Clark because he sees him as possible, running mate opponent, he now says, hey, you want Joseph? I'll bring him halfway. Sure, let me get him out of Independence. Well, and you'd say, where does John Clark want to take Joseph? He wants to take him to Richmond. He wants to show him off to his town. And so by the time Joseph and others are transferred, we know that they're moving now to the Richmond County Courthouse. And you'd say, really, it's the jail site, and a sign you can see is up there today. But the prisoners will be put in a log cabin. Just ramshackle is supposed to not have windows. The prisoners now are chained. So they've got kind of cuffs on their wrists, their ankles. They've got a chain running through all of them, tying them up to the wall. And you'd say, what was a really bad experience? I'd say, well, in the Richmond jail. And this is where Joseph will write, we are prisoners for Christ's sake. Now, in Richmond, there will be a court that's held. And you've got, here's your prisoners, Parley, Sidney Rigdon. Sidney Rigdon becomes very ill during this time, Hiram Smith, others. And as they're now all chained together, we know that the guards, it's very difficult. And at one point, the guards now begin to boast. They're Clark's men, and they're talking about the atrocities they committed against men, women, and children. In other words, I've got one. Hey, I got you one better. And it will be that night that Parley P. Pratt, he is awakened by their boasting of the atrocities they've done in Far West to the Latter-day Saints. And Parley P. Pratt wonders, well, should I stand up and stop it? But he doesn't act on it. And he then describes that Joseph Smith arose and spoke like a lion, and said, silence, ye fiends of the infernal pit, or you or I will die this instant. And it's always called in church history, the night the guards quaked. In other words, they're shaking, they're asking for forgiveness. You get a Liz Swindle rendition of this, silence, ye fiends of the infernal pit. suddenly you'd say, who's saying that? And the prisoner. Well, we then turn to the next morning.
And that was what Parley P. Pratt had said. That was it, Majesty? He said he saw.
Yeah, he said he'd only seen Majesty once, and it was in chains about midnight in this kind of ramshackled Richmond jail. from there, we turned to a man named William McClellan. William McClellan had been a member of the 12. He was the one that was asked to read the Doctrine and Covenants along with other members of the 12, and his conclusion was he could write better revelations than Joseph claimed that he received from the Lord. William McClellan, a schoolteacher by trade, was not well-to-do, but he had financial plans that he saw the Kirtland Safety Society could fulfill for him. When the society fell, William McClellan began to stalk Joseph. And he comes to that Richmond jail, and he says to the jailer that he would like to beat up one of the prisoners. And the jailer thinks, great sport, which one? And McClellan points to Joseph. Joseph's ready to fight him. And McClellan says, I want him chained. And the jailer says, no, not that man. In other words, we shook all night. not him. You know, if you fight him, it's a fair fight. Well, Joseph's willing, but McClellan leaves. He eventually comes back with a club. He says he doesn't want the club taken out of his hands. Jailer says no. And McClellan, to his forever discredit, he then goes to where Emma was living in Far West. He breaks in. He takes personal things of the prophet and his wife and children. And wow, you just wouldn't want to be that guy. Yeah. You know, he's making some really bad choices all at once. Well, all right. Other than, you know, the very difficult time in the jail, why they're in Richmond is to hold what's called a Richmond hearing. And the Richmond hearing is before this man, Judge Austin King. And by the way, Austin King becomes a governor of Missouri, as does John Clark. But Austin King now invites the prosecution to go forward and to bring their witnesses. What is so devastating to Joseph is that many of the witnesses that come forward were former Latter-day Saints. So you'd say, wow, David Whitmer, what are you doing? And Thomas B. Marsh, others are now coming forward. And Joseph described it as a court in hell. Well, they've got, as the hearing goes forward, the charges against Joseph and fellow prisoners begin to mount up. For Joseph, he has 27 charges against him, which go from as simple a thing as stealing an alarm clock to treason against the United States. For Sidney Rigdon, 25, and it kind of goes down from there.
And the treason, I imagine that's the idea that he thinks the church is the stone cut without
right.
hands that's going to fill the earth. Or
And at that time in the United States, they were talking about manifest destiny, that the United States, there's no end of the United States, will one day be from sea to shining sea. We are the stone cut out without hands that will roll forth and fill the whole earth.
So were people actually saying that about the United States, that it was that stone?
Yes.
Okay.
And so suddenly you're saying that, and more than that, you know, your people are being armed. And for so the judge has to determine, is there enough evidence to hold these people over for a trial? So this is just a hearing before the trial. And as the judge listens, when they talked about what you're talking about, the stone cut out without hands that will fill the whole earth, and the judge pronounces that treasonous. We know that Alexander Doniphan was the defense attorney for the Latter-day Saint prisoners. And Doniphan will then stand up and say, hey, judge, if you're going to call that treasonous, you might as well pronounce the entire Holy Bible treasonous against the United States, at which point the judge, soon to be elected governor, hits the gavel and says, I pronounce the Holy Bible treasonous against the United States. Well, Doniphan then said to Joseph, if a cohort of angels were to come down and to pronounce you innocent of all these charges, he said, you know, basically it's already been decided, you know. And at this point, Judge Austin King will divide the prisoners in half. Those who are dangerous, they are to remain in Richmond. Those that are really dangerous, they are to go in a wagon to a place called Liberty Jail. Now, Liberty Jail is a lot different than a log cabin, and it's the way it was built. It was built to be a jail. You've got the blocks on the outside. You've got loose rock in between the blocks and the boards. So if you're inside, if you dig through a board, then all this loose rock will come down. So this was considered to be much more secure. For the prophet Joseph, he will end up in Liberty Jail along with Sidney and Hiram Smith and others, and he will arrive there on December 1st of 1838. He will stay in the jail until April.
That's winter.
1839. That's winter, and boy, it's got to be cold. The jail had a top floor, a bottom floor, and another kind of look at the jail. You get, as Joseph now goes in, you've got small windows. He bids adieu to the people outside. He goes inside. How was Liberty Jail? Wow, awful. The food that they received came in the basket that the hen laid her eggs in the morning. At one point, Hiram Smith claims that they were given human flesh to eat, you know, but you look and you'd say, how's Liberty Jail? Oh, very, very difficult for those, and you're right, winter freezing. But they also had visitors that were allowed to come to the jail. So there were sweet times. Emma Smith will come to the jail to see her husband, Joseph. Mary Fielding Smith and her sister, Mercy, will come to the jail to see the prisoners, obviously, especially Hiram. Now, of all the visitors that came to the jail, perhaps none is more important than a man named Brigham Young. And Brigham Young had been in Kirtland. You know, he'd been building that temple. And he hadn't arrived in Missouri as quick as others had, including Joseph. And Brigham now comes. He's president of the 12 because Thomas B. Marsh has fallen in apostasy. David W. Patton has died in the Battle of Crooked River. Brigham Young is now 36 years old. He's president of the 12. He wants to know from Joseph, what do you want me to do? And Joseph wants Brigham to take the saints somewhere between the Kirtland Temple and the Far West Temple site. It will be Brigham Young that will choose the state of Illinois. And so Brigham Young then will be authorized to begin what we know as the, quote, Mormon Exodus to Illinois. It's also called our Trail of Tears. Now, this Trail of Tears, I think, Clayton, you're young enough. You could do this. You could bike it. It's all well marked. You could probably run it, you know, take your daughters. I don't know. But you've got Latter-day Saints now are on the trail. And where they're heading to, they're heading to Illinois, all right, but specifically, they're heading to what was called a barge town, meaning that you're coming to the edge of the Mississippi River, and you got to get to a barge town because you're not going to be able to walk across. So you can take your possessions, you're at the river, and when the ice stops flowing, the barges run, and you can put your wagons on, and then you can get to Illinois. And so the barge town that everyone is trying to head to will be called Quincy, Illinois. And it's named after John Quincy Adams and just happens to be in Adams County. So this Trail of Tears, you get Latter-day Saints taking all the possessions they can in wagons, some are walking on foot, and they now get to the river's edge. When they arrive at the river's edge on this Trail of Tears, we feature now Emma Smith. This is one of Liz Swindell's paintings. When they reach the river's edge, the ice is flowing, and you never can tell when the ice is flowing, how deep does that ice go, and how safe are you, and what they need is the Mississippi River to freeze over. And so the saints will camp all along that edge. And then you've got the people over in Quincy. There's about 1,600, and you've got 5,000 plus Latter-day Saints on the other side. You got the people in Quincy. They've got their spy glasses. They can see that the people on the other side of the river, they're huddled, they're making fires, they're poor, they need clothing. I mean, the people in Quincy just, they took up collections. They had people go in various parts of the river to go across, take them bedding, you know, as everyone waits for the ice on the Mississippi to freeze. As the ice did so, the first people that crossed would be the children. And there are just wonderful stories where you see this Mosiah Hancock, a child, his parents saying, "Go, Mosiah." And they could hear on the other side across the river, they're yelling, "Come, come, Mosiah." In other words, you know, get across the river, make it. Once they were sure that the children were safe, then the women went across, and then the men, and then they brought the wagons. You'd say an exception to all this is Emma. She is not about to let her kids go. In other words, when they go, she goes. And so she waits till the women are crossing. And notice she has...
she's got two kids in her arms.
Two kids in her arms, you know, babies. And oldest is 7. And, you know, you got Julia there and Joseph Smith Sr. And they're going to walk across the ice and make it to safety. Now, Emma is going through her own extremities, which are so difficult. I mean, imagine that William McClellan has broken into her house, stolen. So Emma takes what she has, and she's got to go this trail of tears about 120 or more miles to get out of the state, then walks across the river, and she, as well as others, are then welcomed into the arms of the people in Quincy. And at some point, we'll take the time to talk about Quincy. Joseph Smith said about that town, he goes, "You know, I could have gone toe-to-toe with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and the troubles their people faced if it had not been for the Good Samaritans in Quincy." So, Clayton, while you're out there, you know, hit Quincy. You know, it's your one spot of the river, you know, where you'd say they've been successful, where other towns have kind of come and gone or just eking along.
Yeah, I've been to Quincy.
Yeah.
Kind of through it.
Okay. So we then turn to, well, what's Joseph doing? Joseph's in Liberty Jail. And to many, they called Liberty Jail like a place of revelation. And Joseph's now writing. He's writing a letter to Emma saying if he were bareheaded and barefoot, he would think that it would be fine if he could just see her again. And you get this amazing love that he has for her. And at this point, he eventually has some of the men, like Alexander McCrae, write down. He sends like 27 pages in one letter to the bishop of the church, as well as Emma. He sends to Newell K. Whitney. And he's saying to Whitney, you know, take care of the people. In other words, you got to take care of what's going on. And in the meantime, for Joseph, you know, it appears that discouragement sets in. And which one of us have not had a chance to repeat that section 121, 122, 123, where Joseph says, "Oh God, where art thou?" In other words, here's all my people facing the extremity of the cold. Here I am, can do nothing about it. I'm trapped. I'm in Liberty Jail with a few. Joseph wants to know, "Oh God, where art thou? And where is the pavilion that covereth thine hiding place?" And then you get the Lord's answer. And the Lord is now saying, "What power shall stay the heavens? As well might man stretch forth his puny arm to stop the Missouri River in its decreed course." In other words, Joseph, hold on. You know, all is going to be well. you know, the Lord has heard your prayers and the answer is coming.
And the great part where he says, if, you know, all this stuff happens, which it did, all this shall be for thy experience.
Yeah, for thy good. Know for, this, thy yeah. son. My son, thou art not yet as Job. In other words, Joseph, you don't even have a journal entry day yet. You know, in other words, and then he's told, unlike Job, where you've got those three friends that are just, you know, knocking him, knocking him.
He must have been something wrong.
Yeah. And Joseph is told, your friends still stand by thee. And so in the extremities tonight has been, the extremities of Joseph, a prisoner and with fellow prisoners, three different prisons. Independence, a good one, you know, if there is a good one. Richmond, pretty tough, probably surpassed by liberty. And then Joseph, where art thou? And then the Lord's answer. And perhaps that's how it is in our lives, right?
Yeah, here it is. Know thou, my son, that all these things shall give thee experience and shall be for thy good. All right, well, I don't know what to say about that, so I won't say anything.
Okay.
But thank you. And I'll finish out this song. Master, the terror is over. The elements sweetly rest. Earth, sun, and the calm lake is mirrored, and heaven's within my breast. Linger, O blessed Redeemer, leave me alone no more. And with joy I shall make the blessed harbor and rest on the blissful shore. The winds and the waves shall obey thy will, peace be still. Whether the wrath of the storm-tossed sea, or demons, or men, or whatever it be, no water can swallow the ship where lies the master of ocean and earth and skies. They all shall sweetly obey thy will. Peace be still, peace be still. They all shall sweetly obey thy will. Peace. Peace, be still.
Oh, wonderful.
All right, guys, thank you for being here, and thank you, Susan. Any last words, Susan?
No, with that, we'll see him shortly.
All right, see you soon. Bye.